His pictures are captivating. His films and words go to the heart of the story. Award-winning photographer, filmmaker, and author Joel Pickford is about to showcase his latest work, pictures from his book, Soul Calling, Photographic Journey Through the Hmong Diaspora. On September 28th, the Fresno Art Museum will premiere a major exhibition based on the book. And we are pleased to have Joel Pickford with us today. Thanks for coming in today.
Nice to be here, Juanita.
I must say, I took a look at the book, and I just really love the pictures. They really tell the story. How long did you work on this book?
I think the book represents about 7 years of photography, both here in the Valley and done on 6 trips to Laos.
6 trips. Tell us a little bit about those trips and what you saw. Did you see changes over the years each time you went?
I saw a tremendous amount of change. Laos is a country that's developing at a breakneck pace. Being a single-party, non-elected government, they can simply decide to move ahead with anything they want, and that's not always a good thing. A lot of outside interests are coming in, China, Vietnam, Australia, European countries, building projects to serve their own interests. But as far as the Hmong are concerned, you're seeing a lot of changes. Like in the first years, I photographed the villages with those beautiful thatched roofs. Now more and more of those villages have brick houses and tin roofs, and now electric wires stretch over the roads that I originally traveled that didn't have any.
Wow. Why did you choose to document the Hmong immigrants? Why did you choose that as your topic for this book?
I was originally recruited to do it by a social worker who was working with a local organization called FIRM that served the refugee community. And they were specifically interested in having me photograph the new arrivals who came between 2004 and 2006 and to focus on the housing issues that they faced.
Oh, that's really something when you take a look in your book at the housing situation that many of them lived in when they first came here. And what I really liked is the way you could compare it to, their villages in Laos as compared to these slums that they were basically they lived here in the Central Valley. And in a way, you almost feel like they've fared better just in their own environment. Why did you want to take a look at that, the housing situation?
Well, there were a lot of issues. There were landlords that were taking advantage of the Hmong, charging them for things that they didn't actually owe. There were really bad conditions. Repairs and maintenance weren't being done. I actually visited one apartment where there was a gaping hole in the roof. And I learned about the amazing story of the Hovhannessian family who came as refugees of the Armenian
genocide.
Exactly.
They came here as refugees themselves,
right,
in a way. And then in a way they were exploiting refugees.
Yeah, and Kaspar, like many early Hmong immigrants, he had an arranged marriage. He only met his bride on his wedding day. And he started out working in the fields and working as a farmer. But ultimately, over 3 generations, the family built up an empire of rental property in the valley to where they finally owned as many as 4,000 units, all free and clear, all low-income, deteriorating kind of rental properties.
And they put absolutely no work into those properties whatsoever.
And that was the issue that was documented in a lot of articles in the Fresno Bee. But the Bee never told the big picture story, so I was really excited to do that as one chapter of the book.
Right. That was very interesting to me. And, when I took a look at the pictures in the book and you look at the faces of the new arrivals just, as they arrive here, and they do seem to just look lost.
Mm-hmm. It's important to understand that the new arrivals who came between 2004 and 2006 are basically the bottom of the heap in the Hmong socioeconomic order. These are the people who were among the last to escape from Laos, among the last to find sponsors to come to the United States. And, their gaunt frames really reflect the pervasive malnutrition in the camps.
And, you know, just like the title of your book, Diaspora, I admit I looked up the word, and, you know, and part of it means to be dispersed. And they were lifted up out of their homeland. They were dispersed all across the country, some here in the Central Valley, some in the Midwest. And you just feel like they were kind of, you know, they were refugees and they, you know, had to leave their homeland, but it just seemed like they were placed anywhere.
Yes. And I think they were in a kind of culture shock. You know, I encountered them in their first days here, and here they were surrounded by these empty white walls that they'd never seen. In some cases, the colder weather than they'd ever imagined. And they were just kind of some of the refugees were very kind of discouraged and withdrawn. They didn't, you know, suddenly they're in a whole new world where you owe all these bills for things like electricity and rent that they weren't used to owing, and you can't get anywhere unless one of your relatives comes and picks you up in a car. And so they were just in this very disoriented state. Now, I saw some families that prospered immediately, like the family of Chachia Yang, who's a Kang master. Within just a few months, all of the adult males in his family had jobs, despite speaking very little English, and he was very respected in the Hmong community and earned a good income as a Kang player, both making and selling the Kangs, teaching others to play them, and performing at funerals, which is a very important thing in the culture.
And really, some of the Hmong people, some of the Hmong refugees who came here, and that was one of the things I remember about, you know, reporting on the new arrivals, is that the ones who had relatives here, and the fact that this group also, in a way, even though they seemed to be lost here, they also benefited from the fact that there was a first wave of Hmong immigrants, people who could kind of help show them the way, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. I think the Hmong, more than any other immigrant group in the United States, really knows how to work together and to stick together and to benefit from well-organized kind of unified support for one another.
What do you see from, you say you know, this was about a six-year undertaking. Some of those new arrivals, do you have knowledge of what's happened in their lives since then?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I've gone to visit them. I had a favorite apartment complex that I write about in the book. It was in central Fresno. And, you know, despite the fact it was owned by the Hovhaannisian family, and despite the fact that it was run down and had all of these bad conditions, I have really very happy memories of that place, because these people were so warm in receiving me and allowing me to come into their lives and to photograph. In fact, throughout this project, both in California and Laos, I found the Hmong people incredibly hospitable and welcoming, and a lot of the photographs I made were a result of Hmong people calling me up and inviting me to a shaman ceremony or to a funeral. You can't just walk around and hope you're going to stumble into something like that. So, you know, they were, you know, I've been asked many times, you know, Joel, how do you go into these cultures all over the world and get inside and make such intimate photographs? And the answer is, when you show people that you are genuinely interested in learning about their culture, and they know if it's genuine or whether there's an agenda.
No, they really do.
They will take you by the hand and lead you places you never thought you would go. And it's just been an incredible experience. I've learned the Lao language in the process. I've gained a Hmong family here in Fresno, the Lee family. I've gained a Lao family in Laos, the Kevik Pongsai family. So of all of the projects I've ever done, this is the most personally enriching for me.
I know you. I've looked at some of your other work, like the work you did in Louisiana and other parts of the country. Do you think a part of when you talk about the way you identify and feel toward the Hmong people is that you know they're here now in your region, and you've been able to just really watch and document the transition in their lives?
You know, it's funny. For a long time, I thought, you know, just from driving past some of the apartment complex for years before doing the project, I thought, man, that's got to be really interesting. Maybe I should do something. So when the invitation came along from Firm, I jumped at the chance. And as soon as I'd been doing it just for days, I immediately wanted to expand the project beyond just new arrivals and look at the people that had already been here for up to 30 years and to travel to Laos and really to try to search out the roots of the culture.
And that's what's fascinating, you know, about this book and I'm sure what we're going to see in the exhibit is the fact that there is now a history, something you can document from the first wave of Hmong refugees to the Central Valley, and then the second wave. And now they have been here in the valley long enough that you see another generation, you know, of Hmong who are prospering. But then again, you have those who are still, you know, living in the slums. But, you know, you could say that about any group. You know, there's a top, middle, and bottom.
Mm-hmm. And actually, the Hmong are moving up really fast. Among immigrant groups, they're one of the fastest group. It's kind of a cultural thing that the parents really push education for the kids. You see the same thing in Laos, by the way. Hmong kids, though a minority in the classrooms, are often at the top of the class. And the same is true here in the valley. The parents really push education. And some of the healthiest families I know who have done the best, they push education and success in the Western world, but they also teach Hmong language and culture. And that's true of my Hmong family, the Lee family.
Right. They still celebrate their culture. And you see that a lot in some of the events and activities that they have here in the Central Valley. Tell us a little bit about the exhibit and what we're going to see.
Okay. First of all, I'm really happy that the Art Museum and the Irvine Foundation gave me the opportunity to spend my whole summer making these very large, beautiful prints. I was printing for something like 7 weeks, 7 days a week. It reminded me why we have museums. You cannot really experience photographs until you see a print actually made by the photographer. Ansel Adams, who's also being shown simultaneously at the museum, used to talk about the negative being the score and the print being the performance. And I've always felt that way, that taking a picture is only 50% of the art. The other 50% is the print that you craft to really bring out the full potential.
And you do craft your prints.
I
mean, they don't just look like a print. Well, once you get through with them, I mean, we're talking, I mean, just beautiful artwork.
Yeah, they're done on a rag paper that comes from a mill in Germany that was milling paper when Shakespeare was writing his plays, and it's coated with a special coating that's similar to the black and white darkroom paper that Ansel Adams uses. But you know, I myself didn't really fully know those images, despite working with the publisher and so on. I didn't really know the images until I made those prints. So it really reminded me why we have museums, so that you can go see original prints installed with special lighting and no distractions, and you know, as opposed to just putting everything online and staying home.
Now, this exhibit is going to premiere at the Fresno Art Museum starting on September 28th, correct?
Yes, uh-huh. And that's a special day. I think events start about 3, and there will be several talks about various shows like the Ansel Adams Show. I'll give my talk at 5 in the Bonner Auditorium. There's a lot to see, so I recommend that folks get there early. I also curated a show by Hmong artist Hua Vang, who's 70 years old, and she's a master of the pandao and story cloth art form. That's an art form that the story cloth that was really born in the camps and is now dying out because it's not really practical for people to continue it. And so it's a way that the Hmong found of telling their own story. And so I'm very happy that in addition to showing my photographs and my view of the Hmong, that we were able to present the Hmong version of their own story in the form of Hua Vang's Pandao art.
Wow, this is really going to be a show. How long is it going to be?
I believe it's up through New Year's because, as you know, Hmong New Year is a very important part of the culture. And then it probably comes down in early January.
Okay. Taking a look at his book, I'd say that the Valley is really in for some great, great artwork and storytelling. Again, Joel Pickford's new exhibit at the Fresno Art Museum premieres on September 28th. And his book, Soul Calling, A Photographic Journey Through the Hmong Diaspora. Great book and great pictures. And thanks so much, Joel, for coming in this morning.
Thanks, Juanita.